This is the fifth and final class given by Brother Colin Badger on the overall theme of exhortations for wisdom from the book of Proverbs. This fifth and final class is on the master's use of Proverbs.
Our study of the book of Proverbs, brothers and sisters, should, as we mentioned at the beginning of our study, come full circle to the one who is the supreme example, who is the supreme manifestation of God's wisdom, who gathered in himself through being the Word made flesh by the Father's own Spirit power, wisdom, application, personal example of that wisdom that far surpassed that of Solomon or a David or an Abraham. We have in him the Word made flesh, and that word is wisdom. So we'd like, in this last session, to make some observations about the link between Proverbs, specifically the book of Proverbs, more broadly, of course, wisdom itself, as it is manifested, and as it was employed by the Lord Jesus Christ. You remember in that first class, the beginning of the week, that we touched on how the Lord Jesus Christ obviously employed through his ministry the very kind of tool spiritually that Proverbs provides for us, the proverbial approach to God's message. Remember, we started with that passage in Jeremiah that God works through the channel of the priest, the prophet, and the wise ones. And looking at those three channels in that passage in Jeremiah that we explored, we then brought that to bear with the fact that Proverbs exemplifies one of those channels, the words of the wise, as opposed to the priest, as opposed to the prophet. Of course, Christ embodies all of those, we said. And at that time, we also mentioned the fact that, of course, looking forward, especially to this class, Christ himself employed the very tools of a parable or a proverb. So let's focus on this a little more this morning as we finish our study and bring it to the Lord Jesus Christ. In Matthew chapter 13 and verse 34, we are reminded how much Jesus employed this teaching tool. Teaching not only by direct principles, as in the case of the Sermon on the Mount, teaching not only by his own personal perfect example, but teaching also by method through the use of parable or proverb or dark saying. For Matthew 13 and verse 34 tells us, "All these things spake Jesus unto the multitude in parables. Moreover, and without a parable, spake he not unto them." Parables and proverbs are virtually cousins when you take a look at the words either in New or Old Testament. Why parables? Why proverbs for the master? Well, the answer is the same as why, for that matter, was it that Solomon had, what, some 3,000 proverbs? And we have a distillation, an inspired selection of that group. And of the many songs, that method as well? Because in serving our minds and knowing how we all have our differences, and knowing that not all the truth can be channeled through one form, we have therefore four gospels, so we might see the Master through four different perspectives, all complementary. Not just one gospel. Why not just one epistle? One large corpus? One long stream of writing. No, we have the Acts, which is narrative. We have long epistles that are extremely carefully constructed as a detailed argument, like the book of Romans or the book of Hebrews. We also have little Philemon. We have a variety, as we do in the Old Testament. And thus, the Master, who didn't always speak in parable to everybody, obviously employed it because it reached out to furnish a very important method as opposed to just the message. Something that wasn't explicitly stated in a parabolic form as a dark saying, as a figure of speech, required some pondering. It required some thought. It required some meditation. It was cryptic, perhaps. Some details were obvious, and yet how those details fitted in were not always so obvious. Perhaps one wanted to, or had to, reach in to the wider basket of, well, what else did Jesus say that was like this, that might help to explain what he's just said in the parable? Did he ever speak about seed at another time? Did he ever talk about plants or tares at another time? You see, it forced personal thought. Moreover, had the Old Testament ever spoken this way? Did the Proverbs or the other parables of the Old Testament ever express things, truths, this way? Put as a parable, as opposed to an explicit statement, the parable required a more reflective challenge from what else the Master had already taught, what he was going to teach thereafter that might also provide some clues, but especially the encouragement to dip into the Old Testament treasure and help that too to bring a bearing on where did these figures come from and what else might help me to unlock the meaning. It forced personal reflection and searching. Dark sayings require some time to bring meaning to light. But then finally, of course, both in terms of message and method, the Lord Jesus Christ, according to the Apostle Paul, and we looked at this at the beginning of the week rather briefly, chapter 1 and verse 24 affirms, "But unto them which are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God." We must surely expect to find in his example, in his person, in his message, in his method, something that would be the perfect embodiment and employment of the kind of wisdom and the kind of approach that we find in the book of Proverbs. Is it any surprise then that as you come to the ministry of the Lord Jesus Christ, he does reach out to Solomon as an example? In fact, it's no surprise that in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 42, Christ specifically points to Solomon and his wisdom. You know the passage, Matthew 12 and verse 42. Says the Master, "The queen of the south shall rise up in the judgment with this generation and shall condemn it. For she came from the uttermost parts of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon." Now watch what Christ is going to do. He is going to align himself with Solomon's wisdom. But he's going further than that, and he has an entitlement. For he says, "She came from the uttermost parts of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And behold," says Christ, with no arrogance, with no idle boast, "a greater than Solomon is here." Now there is a clear affirmation in the New Testament, in the Gospels, from the mouth of the Master, that he intends us to see his wisdom relative to a Solomon, the wisest man, in a sense, of the Old Testament. At least when he was endowed with that wisdom. Moreover, the Master intends his listeners to see in himself, as the Word made flesh, no credit to himself, but as the one who was raised up, the one in whom the Father was working, the embodiment of wisdom in this Son of God, this Son of Man, is far greater than that which was in Solomon's. And part of the exhortation to his listeners, and part of the exhortation, of course, to us, is that, behold, the Queen of Sheba made a huge trek. She went out of her way to come from her home and to come to Solomon and behold the wisdom of his court, the wisdom of his words, the wisdom of those who waited on him. And she was breathless. How much more, the Master is saying, ought ye to respond to the wisdom that's embodied by the Father's inspiration in the one who now walks before you? A greater than Solomon is here. So there is validity, obviously, in bridging Proverbs, bridging the wisdom of Solomon to that of the Master's message and his method. Other little subtle points that you just might find useful as you travel through the ministry of Christ and pick up some of the echoes and the allusions to Solomon and his wisdom, or especially to the book of Proverbs. Have you seen this before? Luke chapter 7 and verse 35. But wisdom, said Jesus in Luke 7, wisdom is justified of all her children. Would you just open that up, please? Luke chapter 7. Wisdom is justified of all her children. Ever thought about what that means? And maybe probed, who is she? Wisdom is justified of all her children. Who's she? Now, from our studies this week in Proverbs, as sketchy as they've been, you remember Miss Wisdom, and you remember Miss Folly, and you remember the metaphor, the figure of speech that's been sustained consistently through the book of Proverbs, where wisdom is personified or is a figure. Wisdom is a figure of a woman. When Jesus says in Luke chapter 7, and looking at verse 35, the following, but wisdom is justified of all her children, back up a little bit. What has he just said? Well, he's actually pinpointed some of the fickleness of his listeners. Look at what he's just said in verse 33. For John the Baptist came, neither eating bread nor drinking wine, and ye say he hath a devil. The Son of Man is come eating and drinking, and ye say, behold, a gluttonous man and a winebibber. Look at the hypocrisy. Look at the contradiction. Behold the fickleness. A friend of publicans and sinners, they declare. Now, which way do they want it? John's way or Jesus' way? They had problems with both. They were critical of both. But wisdom is justified of all her children. That's the language of Proverbs. Wisdom is pictured as a woman in Proverbs, as a matter of fact. And wisdom is pictured as having children. And wisdom beckons to her children in the book of Proverbs. My son, my son, my son, listen to the counsel of your father. Think of the counsel of your mother. We went over that earlier in the week. But back up a little further, brothers and sisters. Come now to verse 31 of Luke 7. The Lord said, at the beginning of this context, the Lord said, whereunto shall I liken the men of this generation? And to what are they like? They are like, watch carefully, they are like unto children. Children? Sitting in the marketplace, calling to one another and saying, we have piped unto you, and you have not danced. We have mourned unto you, and you have not wept. Typical children's voices. Little petulance, cooperate with me, skip, and please play my games. Yes, typical of children. Do you see that before Jesus says wisdom is justified of her children, he has talked about another set of children? Have you noticed that? Here in the context, before he says wisdom is justified of her children, he has talked about the children of folly. The children of this generation, the obstinate children, the fickle children, the children that are blind, the children of this generation that are obdurate, that don't know which way they want it. John comes in that way, and you have your criticisms. The master comes in this way, and you have your criticisms. Which way do you want it? The children of this generation are, obviously, we could fill in elliptically, foolish. But then he says, the children of wisdom are justified. They will be shown to be right. In a compact way, with a little bit of background from the Old Testament, with a key from the book of Proverbs, knowing the themes of Proverbs, because there's not just one, wisdom, a woman, having children, that is to say, those who are her progeny, those who follow in the ways of wisdom, that's a major, simple, basic theme of the book of Proverbs. Behold, here is one greater than Solomon, and greater than John the Baptist, and you have criticisms for him in complete distinction from the criticisms you had of John the Baptist. Wisdom's children will be shown to be right. Who are they? Because the other set of children mentioned in the previous verse are the children of this generation. Obviously, the blind, the obdurate, the fickle, like little kids who don't know what they want and are never quite happy with the way the rules of the game go. You see what he's doing? In a compact and economical way, the master is drawing, in fact, from a very relevant kind of theme in the book of Proverbs. The master's use of Proverbs begins to blossom out. We recall Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 32. Now therefore, said Solomon through inspiration, now therefore, hearken unto me. Who's me? Well, in the context of Proverbs chapter 8, therefore hearken unto me is listen to wisdom, to miss wisdom. Therefore hearken unto me, wisdom, O ye, there it is, children. Wisdom's children. That's not the only place. You see where the phrasing, where the thought comes from the master's words in Luke chapter 7? Without a background of the Old Testament, if you hadn't done some study or some reflection on the book of Proverbs, you just might miss it. How rich it is to study all the treasures of the Old Testament so that we might have what's necessary to unlock the illusions, the echoes of the new. It makes a richer basis, a deeper understanding. It's what a parable or a proverb by method is intended to do. It's not direct teaching, it's parabolic. It requires an unlocking. It requires a little thought, a little questioning, and looking for links, old and new, to unlock the full meaning. So that's the method of a parable or a proverb. Jesus is a master at it, the master. So therefore said Proverbs 8, verse 32, hearken unto me, that's wisdom, O you children, for blessed are they that keep my ways. How are they blessed in the context of Proverbs? How are they blessed? Proverbs is going to answer that, of course, and so will the master. There are rewards. There are blessings if you're the children of wisdom. But you see, hinted here, there's a blessing if you're the children of wisdom. What did Jesus say in Luke 7? Wisdom is shown to be right, justified by all her children. Aha! What he says in Luke 7 is consistent with passages like chapter 8 of Proverbs. Wisdom's a woman, wisdom has children, and the children of wisdom, Proverbs 8, are blessed. Says Jesus, the children of wisdom will be shown to be right. How will they be shown to be right? They will be justified in the final end. They will be shown to have walked in the wise course, and they themselves will enjoy the benefits and the rewards of following in the path of wisdom. So then, tucked in the Lord's compact little words, as it were, in Luke chapter 7, is a rich connection with the Old Testament. The parental message is important. Jesus is, in fact, wisdom. Now let's look at it from a different perspective. Wisdom is justified of all her children. Is Jesus just speaking here abstractly? Or is he the embodiment of wisdom himself? Is he not wisdom? Is he not the one, as Paul has said, who is the Word made flesh? And is he not the one who is the power of God and the wisdom of God? He is. So really, wisdom is justified of her children. Who is wisdom? Ultimately, it's God embodied in the wisdom he gave his Son. So then, those who are Christ's children are the children of wisdom. Interesting, and you just probe that a little further. So then, Matthew chapter 13, which we're just going to use as the mast up here for a moment, reminds us that he spake always in parables. Now we have a little thumbing to do, because if you go to the book of Proverbs and keep a marker in Proverbs this morning, we're going to follow through some more specifics. Let's just use a little elbow grease here this morning. And would you come to Proverbs chapter 25? We won't look up every New Testament link on the other side of the chart, but we will look up a number, especially to convince ourselves, initially, to convince ourselves that indeed Christ is drawing from some very specific parables in the book of Proverbs, or Proverbs in the book of Proverbs. So now, we come to Proverbs chapter 25. And what does this remind you of? Verse 6 and 7. Hear the echo traveling into the New Testament. Proverbs 25, verse 6. Put not forth thyself in the presence of the king. Put not forth thyself in the presence of the king. And stand not in the place of great men. Aha, verse 7. For it is better that it be said unto thee, come up hither, than that thou shouldst be put lower in the presence of the prince whom thine eyes have seen. Where is that recast or used largely in the New Testament? Keep your marker in Proverbs and slip, if you would now, to Luke chapter 14. It should ring a bell. Verse 7, Luke 14, traveling through just to verse 10. Luke 14, verse 7, travel through to verse 10. Verse 7, Luke 14, and he put forth a parable to those which were bidden, when he marked how they chose out the chief rooms, saying unto them, when thou art bidden of any man to a wedding, sit not down in the highest room, lest a more honorable man than thou be bidden of him. And he that bade thee, and him come and say to thee, give this man place, and thou begin with shame to take the lowest room. But, verse 10, when thou art bidden, go and sit down in the lowest room, that when he that bade thee cometh, he may say unto thee, friend, go up higher. Then shalt thou have worship in the presence of them that sit at meat with thee. What did the proverb say? The proverb said, if I can read it to you again, put not forth thyself in the presence of the king, and stand not in the place of great men. For better, says the proverb, better it is that it be said unto thee, come up hither, than that thou shouldst be put lower in the presence of the prince whom thine eyes have seen. Jesus not only is, quotes, quoting, he is recasting slightly under inspiration. Here's a clear hint of his method. He is undoubtedly drawing from the treasury of Proverbs. And you'll notice, by the way, that when we're finished this morning, this is just a small sampling. There's some very useful lists, fairly exhaustive lists, I think, that you can find in the ministry of Christ, published by our brethren, that have tried to find how many of the parables of Christ have a linkage specifically to Proverbs in the book of Proverbs. This is one of the clearest and most obvious. But notice the method. It's clearly that proverb. I think we could say that definitely. But it's not quite a quotation. It's more than an allusion. So what is it? The master is, under inspiration, recasting the parable somewhat. We aren't dealing with a prince and a king. We're dealing with a wedding. But that's relevant because the head of the wedding ultimately is Christ, and he is also the king. So the recasting actually should be noted. In what way is the master tweaking the proverb to suit his present purpose and need as the one in whom all the wisdom resides? Well, that requires a little bit of homework each time. Don't be satisfied just with the fact that you say, aha, that's the source. There's the proverb and here's the parable by the master. Here are the similarities. Mark well the differences, because the differences are intended as much as the similarities. What is Jesus doing when he not only uses such a resource, what's he doing when he's recasting it? Both similarity and difference. Okay, let's slip back to Proverbs again and exercise ourselves a couple more times this way. Proverbs, right here, next one, chapter 21. What does this make you think of? Proverbs 21 and verse 20. Proverbs 21, verse 20. Says Solomon, verse 20. Proverbs 21. There is a treasure to be desired, and oil in the dwelling of the wise. But a foolish man spendeth it up. He that followeth after righteousness and mercy findeth life, and righteousness and honor. Is there a time in the New Testament when the treasure of oil is the subject of attention in a parable? And we are dealing in verse 20 with both wise and foolish and how they have expended or saved their oil in their dwelling. And is there a parable or a proverb in the master's ministry where clearly the foolish are foolish because they have spent it up and not replenished it? We're not going to go there now, but you know very well. It's Matthew 25, the parable of the wise virgins, the foolish virgins. They had oil, and the foolish expended theirs, and they begged the wise when they woke up, please give us of your oil. Jesus now has recast it, but he's done more in that instance. He's expanded it. It is the seed of a parable, but it's greatly amplified. The kernel of Matthew 25 and the parable of the virgins with the oil, the foolish and the wise, clearly has at least part of its kernel back in Proverbs 21. But rather than going to the New Testament, notice here, back up into 13, catch another detail. Proverbs chapter 13, pointing here, verse 9. Proverbs 13, verse 9. This is going to show us something else in the master's method in the New Testament Proverbs. Verse 9 of Proverbs 13, isn't this also incorporated in the larger parable of the virgins? For adding to the previous passage, we have this detail and this truth. Verse 9, the light of the righteous rejoiceth, but the lamp of the wicked shall be put out. Now there's another element that's not in the other parable, but is in the master's parable of Matthew chapter 25. So 13 and 9 provides another detail, not in that parable, but complementary to it, and undoubtedly included as the kernel of thought in Matthew 25. Now come to chapter 20 of Proverbs. Chapter 20 of Proverbs makes Bible study exciting, and it helps us to apply what we try to stress in our Bible seminars. Listen for the echoes. Chapter 20. Here is a third ingredient that's incorporated in the parable of the virgins, not in the previous other proverbs. Is it a synthesis? Verse 13 of Proverbs chapter 20. Love not sleep. Why not? Lest thou come to poverty. Open thine eyes, and thou shalt be satisfied with bread. Now, more than one proverb speaks that way, so there is a theme running through many of the proverbs that warn against sleeping or napping and being caught off guard and ending up in poverty. It may not be the only proverb that provides that additional kernel. But now, what do we see? Three proverbs, or three types of sources, all with key ingredients in the proverbs that are, could we say, synthesized, incorporated, woven into a new parable. But you know, it's therefore not all that new. And yet it's got some of the old. And what did Jesus say at another point in the ministry? He said, the wise scribe draws from his treasury, help me, things both
old and new.
Exactly, thanks, John. He said, Brother John did, old and new. The wise scribe that is instructed in the things concerning the kingdom, said Jesus, draws from the treasury things both old and new. And certainly there was something new, a new commandment I gave you, a new commandment I give you. And yet, between John's gospel and John's epistle, we learn, yet not so new, says John with a little qualification under inspiration. But apart from the Master's atoning work and his resurrection, that for many were new, although embedded in the Old Testament, Jesus also combined old and new, no doubt, in this way. Proverbs, ingredients from the Proverbs, woven into and fleshed out into another parable that may not just have one proverb as its source. It may incorporate or synthesize several wise sayings from the past. And all of those kernels are, in a sense, ground and kneaded together and recast in the parable of the virgins with the oil and the sleeping ingredient, the wise and the foolish. Now that shows consistency in God's method, but it also shows the Master practiced what he preached. The wise scribe incorporates things both new and old. Let's try this one. Proverbs 29 and verse 3. What does this make you think of? Proverbs 29, verse 3. Whoso loveth wisdom rejoiceth his father, but he that keepeth company with harlots spendeth his substance. It's the prodigal son. Now, once you're on to this, Proverbs takes on a fresh and very, very relevant meaning, more than perhaps we had held on to before. Because when you now slip over to chapter 13 of Proverbs, and I can tell you're on the trail, chapter 13, and just sample quickly verse 18, and then verse 25, are there some additional details in a proverb like this? If it's not the only one, it might be least typical of what else is incorporated in the Master's other parable of the New Testament. Proverbs 13, verse 18. Poverty and shame shall be to him that refuseth instruction. Poverty and shame shall be to him that refuses instruction. But he that regardeth reproof shall be honored. Go down to verse 25. The righteous eateth to the satisfying of his soul. but the belly of the wicked shall want. And the foolish son, having now worked his way through the pods, says, when I was at home, I had much better fare than this. In my father's house, I wasn't for want. In my father's house, my belly was not empty. Being one of a number of reasons which helped the foolish, the prodigal son to reevaluate the value of returning home to a home that provided for his needs and gave him something more than the pods that were around him, that were the fodder for pigs and animals. So then, here, Proverbs 29, verse 3, perhaps bridging other Proverbs like chapter 13 and the details of 18 and 25, likely are synthesized, brought together, woven together in a new parable, a fuller parable that's drawing from various kernels in the book of Proverbs as Jesus is the master proverb teller. It provides a richer background. It means that when you listen to the master's parable, you can go back into the Old Testament as well as also search the rest of his sayings to fill out and give deeper meaning to. Each one of those contexts fills out the picture a little more. In a sense, Christ is speaking economically. And if you trace his leads, if you follow his threads, you'll be enriched. It's a much bigger tapestry. It's part of the joy of Bible study. And it should affirm how much there is continuity from old to new, and how much what the master brought was a fuller and deeper embodiment than what was found in the old. Now, we're not going to go through all of these, but this is not exhaustive, brothers and sisters. Here's another set of parables that have leads into the New Testament. Let's just take one or two in this chart. We won't go all, and we won't have to follow through necessarily into the New Testament. Would you come now to Proverbs 14? Once you think this way, it becomes almost obvious. Chapter 14 of Proverbs, what's this make you think of? Verse 1. Construction of a house, wise and foolish, two different buildings, and two different ends, depending on how it's been built. Proverbs 14, verse 1. Every wise woman buildeth her house. Wise? But the foolish plucketh it down with her hands. And then slip down also from chapter 14 to this verse here, verse 11. Verse 11. The house of the wicked shall be what? Overthrown. But the tabernacle of the upright shall flourish. And now slip over to chapter 10, going backwards. Chapter 10 and verse 25. Pick up another kernel. Now, isn't this interesting? Having spoken in one chapter about the house of the wise and the house of the foolish, and how one will endure and one will crumble or finally be destroyed, another element is brought in this proverb, chapter 10 and verse 25. As the whirlwind passeth, so is the wicked no more. But the righteous is an everlasting, hear this, foundation. Between Matthew's record and Luke's record of the parable of the wise man who built his house on a rock, as opposed to the foolish man who built his house on sand, I believe it's Luke's account that stresses the word foundation. Matthew stresses certain details, and that record of the parable, Luke's record of the parable, does hone in a little more, if I recall right, on foundation. But it's there, between the two parables. Again, what seems to be happening in the master parable teller, that Christ is drawing from a number of relevant overlapping parables or proverbs, and synthesizing them, recasting them into another fuller parable. But it's drawing from more than one location again. Let's go to the last one down here in the list. Proverbs 19 and verse 17. I'm going to choose this one because it ties in a most interesting way to our first study this morning by Brother Andrew Walker. This was not orchestrated. Verse 17. It's one of those passages, Canadian term, we can skate over. Verse 17. He that hath pity upon the Lord, upon the poor, lendeth unto the Lord. And that which he hath given, will he pay him again. I wonder if we've ever stopped and thought about the insight this is giving to the doctrine of the one body. Let me say that again, and that's not my phrasing. That comes from Brother Elf Nichols many years ago when he was involved in the unity effort at that time in North America. He used the phrase, the doctrine of the one body. How is it here? He that has pity, you see, on the poor brother, and therefore gives to the poor brother, cares for the poor brother, is in fact lending to the brother? No, not quite. He that has pity and serves and cares for and ministers to the poor brother, he who lends to the poor is lending to the Lord. Isn't that the doctrine of the one body? That what you do to my brethren, you have done to me. Isn't that an incredible Old Testament disclosure of the doctrine of the one body? Come to Matthew 25 then, where Brother Andrew took us this morning, only an hour ago. Not to say that it rests just on that one proverb, but I'll tell you, when you go through the Old Testament, it's not too easy to find the roots of what he says in Matthew 25 and verse 40 with a clearer link than Proverbs 19 and 17. Not to say that it would be the only one, but Matthew 25 and verse 40 is dealing with the poor brother who is hungry in verse 35, who is thirsty in verse 35, who is a stranger in verse 35, who's been naked in verse 36, who's been sick or in prison in verse 36, and declares Jesus in verse 40 the truth of that proverb. The king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of these, the least, the poor brother, the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me. He who lends to the poor brother is lending to Yahweh. Simple truth, doctrine of the one body. What you do to me, you do to my brethren. Paul, you've been a persecutor. Saul, you've been a persecutor of the ecclesia, of the one body. And you have persecuted me, Saul. The disclosure of the one body doctrine on the road to Damascus. Proverbs is rich, therefore, brothers and sisters, in its threads into the New Testament. And the master proverb teller provides that important link. Do you know, as we come to a close this morning, in the next few moments, that we have a wonderful hymn that was, of course, in the old book, that is very much tied to Proverbs chapter 8. And so we too, in our hymn writing, not that we've written that hymn, but in our selection of hymns, in some cases our brethren have written them, are following a similar practice of taking Proverbs and recasting them. And that's legitimate. Hymn 351, oh, happy is the man who hears instruction's warning voice and who celestial wisdom makes his early only choice. For, here's the metaphor, she has treasures greater far than east and west unfold, and her rewards more precious are than all their stores of gold. Proverbs 8, verse 19. My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. And you know, that very kind of figure finds its way into the epistles outside of the Gospels. James chapter 3 and verse 15 and 17 is only one of a number of passages in James that alludes to the Proverbs. And that too has a catalog in one of our Christadelphian sources, by the way, the Proverbs and the Epistles. James 3, this wisdom, there's the operative term, this wisdom descends, celestial wisdom in the hymn, celestial wisdom, heavenly wisdom. This wisdom descends not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. That's the world's wisdom. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated. Watch the language. Full of mercy, good fruits. What did that say? My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. Says James, the wisdom from above, it's the language of Proverbs, is full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And he uses that same kind of language earlier in James 1 verse 5. It is the language of Proverbs. So the Proverbs weave themselves, not only through the Master's parables, but elsewhere into the New Testament. Let's continue our hymn, 351. In her right hand, this is Proverbs 8, she holds to view a length of happy days. Riches with splendid honors joined are what her left displays. Here's the maternal, paternal theme in Proverbs. She guides the young with innocence, in pleasant paths to tread. A crown of glory she bestows upon the hoary head. It is Proverbs 8. And so, brothers and sisters, as we finish our studies this morning, we finish with the New Testament, supremely the Master himself. But I suppose we could also say from the quotation in James, we also finish with the Lord's brother, James himself. So perhaps we can wear some other glasses in our Bible study and Bible reading as we read the New Testament, and as we read the Old Testament, and look for the exhortations for wisdom to ourselves and our children. Thank you.